Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1103. Lots of new stuff going up over in the ID10T shop. Some St. Daryl candles, if you're a Walking Dead fan. That's all I'll say. St. Daryl candles going up. What is the date today? Is the 27th of November, so they should be going up in a couple of days. The year is 2020. This is my audio time capsule of the time that St. Daryl candles were about to go into the shop at id10t.com and save the world! disclaimer, candles may not actually save the world. So yes, that's at id10t.com. Please go check that out. Let's talk about you, the ID10T community, and this ID10T community corkboard, events at id10t.com is the email, is a friend of the podcast, friend to me and friend of the podcast, Chris Sullivan, whom I love. Chris is just the best, nicest dude. He was on the podcast a while back. He is in the show This Is Us. He is Taserface. And also, he is a damn fine musician. He is an amazing singer, and he's put out an album under the moniker Joseph the Spouse. The album is called 6 Feet from Under, and it was produced and co-written by Taylor Goldsmith from the band Dawes, and it is available everywhere for download and streaming as of right now. Came out November 19th. It is after November 19th, so that means that you can get it right now. So congratulations to my pal Chris Sullivan on a fantastic album that is now out there in the world, ready for your consumption and enjoyment. Let's talk about this episode of the podcast. This episode is Carl Urban, who has been in everything, and he's great in everything. He's the fucking coolest guy, and he's also really nice. Really nice dude. I've had the pleasure of knowing Carl for a little while now, and he is on one of Lydia's and my favorite shows, The Boys, and he plays Butcher. And when we recorded this, when did we record this? It was a couple months ago, because we're talking about The Boys, I think, about to be coming out. And now season 2 of The Boys is fully out on Amazon. You can get seasons 1 and 2. So it's available. So that's just to give you a timeline. Because I think I even say something in the podcast, like, oh, when quarantine happened like 6 months ago. Well, it's been longer than 6 months. So that should explain that little ripple in time, and also why we were just sort of dancing around story points of The Boys, because I never want to spoil anything. I never want to spoil anything if you haven't seen it yet. I want to give you an opportunity to catch up, as we are in. There is a wealth of content to be watching now. A lot of good stuff, too. And The Boys is just a fantastic show. Erin Moriarty, who plays Starlight on The Boys, she was on a couple months back. Fantastic guest. And so it's just a great show. If you have some time and you listen to this this holiday weekend in the United States after Thanksgiving, catch up on The Boys if you haven't yet. All right, that is it. Here is the ID10T podcast number 1103 with Mr. Carl Urban.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
What's up, Carl? How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How you doing?
Okay. I'm just making sure I've got the right microphone. No, let's use this one. Okay, great. I'm just trying to get, you know, as long as I've been doing this, especially in quarantine, I still have not come up with a better lighting situation. My office is incredibly dark and then backlit.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's ideal. The cinematographer's wet dream.
Yeah, it's like, how could I Photoshop? Like, I would have to Photoshop the perfect environment here. I have a studio, a podcast studio, but I just never go there because, you know, it's why leave the house?
Why leave the house? Well, especially in the middle of a global pandemic. I mean, really.
Yeah, I mean, come on. We haven't really been much of any. Have you? Well, New Zealand did a pretty amazing job, and you were booked to record the podcast maybe a week or two ago, and then there was an immediate, quite sudden lockdown that happened. Is everything okay down there now?
Yeah, it's, by and large, I think that the New Zealand government's done a phenomenal job of protecting the population of New Zealand. We, you know, in March, we went into a lockdown for 6 or 7 weeks, and then we had 102 days of no community transmission. Then all of a sudden, overnight, suddenly we, from a cold storage facility, we had an outbreak. They don't know what it was, but they suspect it was from frozen food imported into the country. And we went into a 3-week lockdown. And but now we've just come out of lockdown, and you know, we still have a low amount of community transmission that's going on. So it's just something that I think that we're going to have to learn to manage and deal with and take the proper precautions. You know, it's just it's going to be a reality of life until there's a vaccine.
Who knows when we'll be traveling internationally again, recreationally. And even if tomorrow they were like, oh, you know what, it's fine, go wherever. I mean, I know people are having to travel internationally here and there. A friend of mine lives in England, had to come to the States for something and flew home. And she said there were literally 40 people on her flight, including the crew. So it's just such a strange time. But New Zealand is one place that I was like, God damn it. For so long I've wanted to go. And now I was like, oh, is it going to be a couple of years before I can go to New Zealand now?
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, currently the border's closed. So unless you're a New Zealand citizen, or I think they do make exemptions. I know my friend John Cho has just arrived. He's shooting a Netflix series here. And, he had to quarantine for a couple of weeks. But I think pretty much the border's closed. So
right. It's
just an interesting, gnarly time we live in, isn't it? It's so surreal.
Yeah, what have you been doing with your time all these months?
What have I been doing? I actually have really enjoyed lockdown, I have to say. Just great quality time with my boys, spending time with my family. That's really it. You know, watching a bunch of movies, just sort of taking it easy. It's all you can do, really. But it's just great. The first time we went into lockdown, there was a certain amount of anxiety around it because of all the unknown factors around COVID.
Right.
You didn't know how easily it was transmitted and, you know, how susceptible you were. And, you know, and the second time, okay, there's a lot more information out there. And so that degree of anxiety had gone, but having been given the freedom for 102 days to suddenly not have it, that was the challenge on the second time around. I didn't like a lot of people had issue with it. I didn't mind it too much. You know, I love being at home, and quite often I'm away for a lot of the year. And so I'm just loving being home, and I just wish, you know, that it was under better circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, it had a lot of people that I've talked to that were in the sort of the constant churn of work and busy and never being home. It has been such an interesting time to, oh my gosh, I have a home and I have, you know, like people that I am getting to spend some more time with. And I think a lot of people have also had this kind of existential, not crisis, but just sort of the idea of like, am I away too much? Do I work too much? Should I be home more in the future, even when I have the option of being away more? Like, have you started to tackle some of those larger kind of existential issues?
Well, it's certainly, I think that there is a this whole sort of, you know, pandemic has forced us to do things in a manner that we hadn't done before. And, you know, for me, I guess the direct impact was, you know, going to the release of season two. Normally I would have been, of The Boys, normally I'd be hopping on a plane and would be going over to America or Europe and to do mass junketing, to talk to the press, to get the word out, to get the good people to watch the show. But this time it was all done from home, and I was, you know, sitting much like we are now on a Zoom call and talking to journalists that way. And at the end of it, I was like, damn, I kind of like this. I don't have to hop on a plane, you know, I can do this at home, this is great. So going forward, I'd be like, yeah, I'm quite happy to do it from home, just patch me in, you know?
Yeah, I know, it's just that just those days where you're like, what city am I in? What time is it? When did I sleep last? I mean, it's just that nonstop, we do adapt, our bodies do adapt to pretty much whatever we, you know, in within reason, what we kind of throw at it. And now that I've had the ability to not have to work, you know, basically 8 days a week and be up, you know, for 16 hours working nonstop, I'm like, you know what? This is not so bad. Like, how did I do that before? I don't know how I did that schedule before. Like, getting back into that momentum is going to be pretty insane, because I know you guys are going back. I know eventually you're going to shoot a season three of The Boys.
Right.
And have you even talked about when that's going to be, or is it still like, yeah, we're trying to figure that out?
Yeah, season three of The Boys is currently slated to go before the cameras end of January 2021.
Oh, great.
And the good thing about it is that there are a whole bunch of productions that are currently just sort of getting going at the moment. So there's going to be a whole lot of test cases out there to see, you know, what the protocols are and what the inherent risks and procedures are. And so it's great. We're not first off the rank. So we're pretty optimistic that it's going to happen. And, you know, for me coming from New Zealand, it's sort of means that I have to spend 2 weeks in quarantine in Toronto before I even set foot on set. And I guess when I return back home, there's another 2 weeks in quarantine.
Right.
So, you know, if I'm shooting for 5 months with a month, I'm going to have to add a month of it on top of that for quarantine. But, you know, we're all, it's, you know, that's just, I guess it's until, as I said before, until there's a vaccine, that's just one of those reality of life that we have to accept. And, you know, myself and the entire cast are so looking forward to getting back to season three. We had such a blast shooting season two, and we're really, I feel like we've sort of bonded, you know, pretty well as a family unit now. And it's exciting, and it's just wonderful to be on a project that has such a great solid fan base, and it's only growing. And you know, I just can't wait for everybody to see the the insane mechanics of season two.
Well, my wife and I, it was one of our favorite shows of the past season. And when I saw, I think I probably ran into you at Comic-Con the summer before it aired. And I've been friends with Eric Kripke for like 25 years. And he was like, he was trying to explain the show, but didn't, he was like, well, you just have to see it. And I know, of course, this obviously is based on comics, on the comics, but it is such a fucking amazing show. And we were so excited that it's coming back, excited that it's coming back again. But, you know, listen, we're in a renaissance is a kind word, glut is another word of media right now, where there's just so much to watch. There's so much to catch up on. And a lot of stuff you just sort of eat it like fast food. You consume it like fast food. But The Boys is one of those shows, you just keep thinking about it after you watch it. It's so fucking good. It's just like, if the vibe of Breaking Bad were about superheroes, those moments, I mean, when you, and Eric is, Kripke's masterful at that kind of stuff too. Mm. But when you read the script, did you go, holy shit, this is going to be so different? Or was it, once you kind of got on set, started seeing how everything was playing out, did it start to occur to you, like, I think we're doing something really different here?
Well, I guess it was pretty apparent to me reading the pilot and the initial three episodes of season one that this was going to be a project, you know, extraordinary and tonally unique and, you know, completely different to anything else that I'd ever seen, particularly in the superhero genre. You know, I was really drawn to that irreverent tone. I was drawn to the character of Billy Butcher in a way that I knew that I would have so much fun playing this character. And the quality of the dialogue and the way that the characters interacted with each other, you know, was clearly elevated. And so I went and had a meeting with Eric Kripke and Evan Goldberg and Seth Rogen, and we discussed the project, and it was pretty clear to me that it was going to be something that was going to be worthwhile being involved with. You know, and my only concerns were, you know, I wanted to make sure that the working conditions were going to be user friendly, you know, and, you know, Kripke assured me that the show was, you know, going to be done in a way that was, respectful, to the health and safety of everyone involved. So I was like, sign me up.
That's great. I mean, and that must come from experience of working. I mean, you've worked on some fucking insane things, Carl. I mean, yeah. Like legitimately three, you know, you're in so many of the biggest franchises in film, and it's just one right after the other. You got your Lord of the Rings, you got your Star Trek, you got your Bourne Supremacy. Like to sort of wrap your mind when you look at your career, do you feel like, oh, I've done some pretty cool shit? Or do you feel like, no, there's still so much more to do? Like, I'm so curious to hear how you view success, how you view your own career. Do you even think about that kind of stuff, or do you just kind of go day to day?
To be perfectly honest, I don't really think about it too much until I get into a situation where I'm talking to someone like yourself.
Of course.
I certainly don't, you know, go on any sort of binge watching retrospective and, you know, it check out past projects. I'm very much kind of in the moment, what's on my plate, what's coming up. And I certainly have never planned my career to any great degree because, you know, I've been in a lot of good shit, but I've been in some shit as well. And it's always a leap of faith. You never know how a project is going to turn out until it's up there on the screen, because, you know, there are a multitude of collaborators that get to have their little stamp on it. And, you know, and that can be for the detriment of a project sometimes as much as a benefit. Yeah, you know, certainly I have found in my career that time and time again, I have the most enjoyable experience and the best results just coming from working with the most high caliber collaborator that I can.
Right.
And in that regard, I've been really blessed to have worked with some truly gifted, amazing people, the best in the business. And that is typically where, you know, where the good shit happens.
I really have to wonder what it is about New Zealand that everyone that I've had the pleasure of meeting and or working with from New Zealand, it's just there's just such a nice, healthy, emotionally healthy vibe where everyone just feels like, oh, you know, we're doing what we do. I don't sense a lot of anxiety inherent to the fabric of New Zealand culture, but, you know, the folks from New Zealand that I've met and gotten to know, it's, you know, you, Jermaine, Brett, Taika, Rhys Darby, Neil Finn, you know, met Peter Jackson a couple times. Like, everyone just seems...
Sounds like you've met everyone. That is the population of New Zealand right there.
I would so love to understand what it is about New Zealand culturally that fosters such a seemingly healthy kind of emotional mindset about things that doesn't really seem to be about ego. Is there a little bit of tall poppy syndrome? Cause, you know, Rhys Darby had a show called Tall Poppies, and it was like that idea of like, well, you never want to seem like you're too above anyone, but there isn't like a, it's not like an insecurity about it. I don't know. Could do you understand what I'm talking about? Can you explain any of that?
Yeah, I do. I've got a couple of theories on that. I mean, first of all, like, you know, the New Zealand film and television industry is pretty myopic in nature. And because of that, whether you're an actor, a writer, a director, you are forced to work in all sorts of facets of your industry. You know, you might be an aspiring director, but you know what? You're also going to be shooting. You're going to be shooting the camera. You're going to be doing sound. If you're an actor, you're not just going to be specializing in, you know, film. You know, you're going to be working in television. You're going to be working in theater. You're going to be working in radio. And I think, you know, fundamentally at its heart, New Zealand artists, I think they are very grounded in the craft of what they're doing as a result. And in my experience, I find a lot of our counterparts, and particularly in the States, become very top heavy. They become focused on the peripheral aspects of the industry. It's like they've got agents, managers, lawyers, they've got publicists, they've got stylists, they've got dietitians, they've got endorsement, they've got a social media person. So there's all sorts of other things that they're sort of focused on, which in I think in my opinion, and sometimes that sort of really kind of leads to the detriment of the craft of what they're actually doing. Whereas in New Zealand, I think, you know, we are just, I guess, are blessed in the regard that we sort of typically just sort of focus on the craft of what we're doing and the job at hand. So, but, you know, I don't know. Or maybe it's just something in the water. I don't know.
No, I totally understand what you're saying, and everything that you said definitely rings true, particularly about the States and a lot of the stuff that we focus on here. You know, I'm sure a lot of that has to do with just the sheer numbers of people who are clamoring for attention in the business. But it is that I think that you're right. The detrimental part, like when you're focusing more on the brand of what you're doing rather than the craft or the art of what you're doing, you're right. It can, and focusing on the brand stuff is really alluring too, because a lot of that just feeds into the ego stuff. You know,
and that's the danger. You know, you have to love the art within yourself, not yourself in the art.
Such a great quote.
Yeah, that's the danger. That's the danger, you know. And sort of just feeding it back to the boys, and that's why I feel kind of really blessed that, you know, I'm working on a show. Even though we have people from all over the world that are working on the show. We've got Tomia from Israel, and Anthony, he's also from New Zealand, and we've got a bunch of Americans and some English cast members and stuff, but everybody is just really seems to be on the same page. And I think that when you get a cast like that, and it truly is a collaborative endeavor, and nobody is trying to, you know, screw other people over, then you get great results. And in my experience, you know, I've worked on some productions where it is not this, amazing, benevolent sort of collaborative experience. There are, you know, people out there to try and, you know, mess with your work in order to make themselves look better. And it's
right.
It's a competition. And, on the boys, there is competition, but it's healthy and it's not nobody's out to sabotage.
Yeah, there is the healthy competition, which I think is, oh, that's really amazing. How can I be inspired by someone else's work and one up my game to do better? Or just the competition with yourself. How can I be better today than I was yesterday? Which thing is helping.
Right.
But you're right that, you know, I must sabotage and salt the earth for everyone to elevate myself is the most toxic, detrimental. And I don't know how it's almost like there isn't really an acting class to teach for that, you know, where it's like, well, you might, you know, like, yes, you're going to acting class and you're learning how to act in ideal conditions, but you might encounter situations where, you know, there are egos or it's like someone will come out of their trailer or people are cranky. And it's like, how do you get in and focus on your craft when you kind of have to shove that stuff out of the way? That's a whole other learning experience as well.
Yeah, it is. And, I think that, you know, part of the skill set of being an actor is you have to have that ability to be able to shut everything else out. And you know, you've got a camera crew of, you know, 30, 60 people standing around watching you. You have to have the ability to, you know, focus them out of your world and just sort of zero in on your partner in the scene and the work at hand. And, you know, certainly when you encounter, you know, tricky actors, that it's just an extension of that skill set, you know. But, yeah, but as I said, you know, for me, for the last two seasons, working on The Boys has just been such a great experience. You know, working with the likes of Jack Quaid and Aaron Moriarty and, you know, Tamir and Laz Alonso, Karen Fukuhara. I mean, they're just real solid players and great people. And, you know, and really that's a testament to Eric Kripke. You know, he's put together just a wonderful collective of players and has given us just fantastic material to run and run and play with.
This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Do you ever think about doing, I know you've done a lot of different types of stuff, but I also, my experience with you has always been, you're also kind of a comedy guy too. Like, is there comedy? Do you see yourself as a comedy guy? Like, do you want to do more comedy stuff?
That's a great question. I don't really like the idea of pigeonholing myself into any one particular genre over another. And in fact, my natural instinct is as soon as I've done something, whether it be a comedy, then I want to swing the other way and do something right, completely opposite.
Yeah.
That constant process of reinvention, I think it keeps it interesting for me as an actor, but also for an audience. I have got a lot of sort of comedic roles on my resume, but you know, there's also, I think, a fair balance of drama and action and all sorts of other stuff in there too. And as I said before, I haven't planned this career. It's just sort of stumble along. If I read a piece of material and then, you know, start making decisions on about how I might like to play the character or, you know, get those creative juices going, then that is to me a really good indication that, you know, that it would be something that I should pursue.
Yeah, but you ask good, but it's clear that you ask good questions, because the fact that you even had the awareness to ask Kripke and Seth and Evan, you know, basically is it going to be a good set? Is it going to be a fun working environment? That's an amazing question to ask. And I think a lot of people, when you are putting brand and career over like craft and art or experience first, you know, like that's where, how you can fall into some of those tricky rabbit holes. But the fact that you even had the awareness to ask that question is a really healthy
question. Yeah, the question was more like, listen, motherfuckers, I don't want to be working 6 days a week, because I've been there, I've done it, and I'm not doing it again. So you ensure me that this schedule is going to run on time and that we're not going to, you know, be shooting for months and months in extension of what we contractually agreed to, and right, that, you know, we're going to be working reasonable hours, not 17-hour days. I mean, that's right, really what the conversation was. It's like, I mean, you know, as much as is it going to be a fun set? Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, you determine your reality yourself on that level. But no, it was, you know, it's always that freaky thing when you sign a contract and particularly one like this, because you are taking a huge leap of faith and you have no idea you're signing away 5 or 6 years of your life, or certainly, you know, 5 months at a time, to these producers, and you have no idea if, you know, they're going to be able to manage the production in a way that is actually going to look after not only the cast but the crew, and so yeah, it's that to me the working conditions are for everybody, not just the actors, are a huge concern to me.
Yeah. Did you have to sit with the idea of potentially signing away, not signing away, but signing on for what I assume could possibly be 5 or 6 seasons, you know, considering that the show seems to be going well and building off of each season, versus that very kind of transient lifestyle of film where it's like, yeah, you work on something for a handful of months and then you move on and then you do something else.
Yeah, well, I was really looking forward to the opportunity to be able to tell a story, or to be part of a storytelling process that worked with a larger palette, which had the luxury of time over a multitude of seasons to really flesh out characters and develop a strong arc. And, you know, this just presented me that opportunity. And you know, really, it came down to two factors. It was the character of Billy Butcher and it was Eric Kripke. And between the two of them, it was like that's what clinched the decision for me.
And now let's briefly pause to thank our sponsor for this episode of the ID10T podcast, Squarespace. You've got your domains, your websites, your online stores, your marketing tools, your email campaigns, anything from start to finish that you want to build as a digital presence. Squarespace will absolutely help you do whatever your idea is, whatever work you want to showcase. If you want to sell a product or a service or promote a physical or an online business, you're going to get beautiful templates created by world-class designers, and then powerful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell anything. You can customize it however you want. Everything's optimized for mobile right out of the box. You're going to get 24/7 award-winning customer support. Nothing to patch or upgrade ever. It just happens. You don't even have to worry about it. So head on over to squarespace.com/ID10T for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code ID10T and you're going to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. So that is Squarespace. Go make your thing. Go make your thing. Go make your digital thing. Thank you to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the ID10T podcast, which we now return to.
Do you think since your experience in New Zealand has been, like you said, you've trained on a lot of different types of things. When you work in New Zealand, film, television, theater, radio, it's basically, it sounds like every kind of performance medium and also all the different aspects. Do you envision other types of things that you want to do? Do you write things on the side? Do you want to direct things? Are you just happy kind of going in as an actor and then not having all the responsibility of carrying all the other stuff?
I love having less responsibility, or shall I say, I just love having the responsibility to just sort of focus on one character and how that character interacts with those around them. To me, that's that is a lot of work in itself. That being said, you know, I definitely do have a desire to move into other areas, and directing is something that has always fascinated me, and I believe that I would, you know, probably be a pretty capable director. The difficult aspect for me is I've worked with some really truly great directors, and I know what it takes to be a phenomenal director, and all of the elements that you need to have at your fingertips to do that job well. You know, you have to know about not only character, but you have to know about writing, you have to know about symbolism. realism, imagery, sound, the camera, and you have to be adept at being able to communicate with other people to communicate your ideas. You're going to have 50 or 60 people coming at you each day with questions that you have to have answers for. And I've worked, you know, I've worked with the best, you know, and I've seen how they deal with it, and it's a huge challenge, and it's not one that I would want to take lightly. And you know, for now, I really still, you know, I've been doing this for over 20 years. I still feel very passionate about the job of acting and storytelling. So you know, maybe one day, but certainly no day soon, shall we say. But maybe
one. Well, yeah. I mean, also, yes, knowing that you have to be the final answer on basically everything. To me, the scary thing about directing is that if anyone asks a question about anything, you have to have an answer. And if you don't know, you have to make it up, and you'd have to hope that it's right, because you ultimately are the grand conductor of all of it. And everyone's looking to you as sort of the captain of the production to know how it's supposed to go. And you have to hope that everyone's on the same page. And if they're not, you have to figure out how to get everyone on the same page. To me, that just feels like that is just an extraordinary amount of responsibility that you have to really love what you're doing. Yeah.
And then, you know, and then you, after you've shot that thing for 3 months, possibly more, you have to go and spend a couple of months in a dark sound booth or a dark editing suite and then a sound booth. And, you know, that's going to seriously jeopardize any outdoor activities you might want to do. So,
yeah,
it's a huge commitment. I don't know.
It is a huge commitment. And also there are, you know, when you're assembling, you have to really have a strong idea of what you want, because there are a million ways you can assemble a scene.
Yeah.
Just the cuts of the music and which takes you use. And it just feels like, to me, I'm sure people who are born with the director gene go, oh, that's so exciting. You get to sculpt this kind of three-dimensional thing. And to me, I go, there's a million ways to fuck that up and maybe two where it works. And yeah. I don't know if I could hit the one or two. I would just be terrified the whole time. Like, I don't know. This just seems... This is hard.
Yeah. No, it's I don't know. I mean, for me, it is definitely something of interest. But as I said, you know, and writing. I mean, I've such a huge admiration and respect for writers and for the craft of writing. I mean, to just have that discipline to sit down in your office and just every day tap something out. I tried it, and my attention span is too short, and it's just that having that dedication and commitment to do that. You know, especially, you know, you wake up and it's a beautiful sunny day and it's like, oh, I could be on my boat fishing.
Yeah,
playing golf. I could be surfing. It's like, why would I want to sit inside and be in my imagination and have my face in front of a computer for...
Yeah, and you live in a paradise too. Like, you live in New Zealand. It's like, why wouldn't you want to be outside if you live in New Zealand?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I would imagine that doesn't help a whole lot either if you're, you know, if you're in... Basically, you're in the Shire all the time. Why would you want to stay inside and tick, 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 tick away?
Different strokes. But I guess, you know, it's like anything in life, that when you work on something and you invest your time and energy into it, the reward really comes at the end of the day when you get to stand back and look at what you've created and what you've created in collaboration with others and feel proud of what you've done. And certainly I get that sense of satisfaction from doing what I do now. And it happens more often than not, you know, at the end of a shooting day when, you know, you're just winding down and you're going back over your head over what you've done. Very rarely for me is it actually when I watch the finished product, because for me, it's all about what happened in the moment. On set, and that's where I guess I derive the greatest amount of satisfaction, and then from there it sort of gets handed over to other people.
Do you mind if I ask you some? I don't have kids yet, but my wife and we're gonna try to do that. Can I ask you some dad advice? Because I know you have two kids, and one of them's a full adult, and the other one's a teenager, so sure. almost a full adult.
Yeah.
How, and then this might be a dumb, obvious question, but how did the arrival of children in your life sort of change your priorities, change your life, change how you see yourself, your relationship to the world? What was it, sort of a magical moment that you had, or was it like, did it feel very natural right away?
Well, I was actually, I mean, at the time where we had our first son, I was 28, and I was just, I'd just been cast in Lord of the Rings. And, you know, certainly for me, it wasn't, you know, I was always really focused on my career, and you know, the thought of having children was not something that was on my radar, but it's something happened to us, and it's just been the greatest gift in the world. And it has really made my life's journey so much richer and rewarding as a result. And I've learned so much through having these beautiful kids. I would just, you know, if you have that opportunity, it's just, it's the best, you know, and it certainly, you know, I found that it's taught me a lot. Particularly it teaches you patience. That's pretty much the first lesson you're going to learn.
you can't reason, you know, with the baby. You just can't reason with the baby. Why are you crying right now? There's no, everything's fine. You just can't.
No. But yeah, it's, you know, it's certainly, and for me, it was, you know, I remember being certainly a little freaked out at first. Obviously, as I said before, I was so really focused on just achieving what I wanted to achieve in my career, and just the thought of having this huge obligation and responsibility just freaked me out. But, you know, I think the universe provides, and because I had that obligation and that responsibility, you know, and also I had a fantastic partner at the time, and we worked really well together as a team, and the universe provided, you know, I just, you know, as my family was blossoming also, my work in films and television was also going gangbusters. So, yeah, it's a special thing. If you get the opportunity, it's the best thing you'll ever do.
But that's, I love the idea of you saying that the universe provides, because that's basically just saying, like, look, things are going to happen, but ultimately you figure it out. Like, you get through it. The answers are there. You may not have them all. And that's sort of like, in the way that I was kind of catastrophizing, like, editing a movie, there's a million different ways you can fuck that up. But I think about that with kids too. Oh my God, there's a million different ways where you could not do the right thing, or they could, you know, but I guess you would never do anything if you thought that way all the time. Like, you just, I guess there is just sort of having faith in yourself, in the process, in the universe, and all that. And
look, it's easy to overthink it. Kids are like jelly. You just want to cram as much good shit in there before the jelly sets. You know, and if you feel like you're fucking it up, then you're probably on the right track, you know.
You mean you're on the right track, you're doing it right, or you're on the, or you're,
yeah, you're doing it right, you know, it means you care about what you're doing, you
oh
know?
good
it's yeah, you know, it's a funny old thing, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but it's also like, you know, you want to give them. And I was pretty, you know, my parents were pretty fantastic. So it's like, I don't think I'm, it's not like, oh, I'm not going to do what my parents, like, I love both my parents. And, but I also know, like, oh, I'm a bit of an overthinker. I get anxious about things. I don't want some poor kid to have to do that. But I also feel like you can't really, like, kids are like sponges, right? They absorb, they just absorb. So, you know, how do you make sure that you're, did you feel like you had to go into a different mode as a parent? Like, I have to go into parent mode, or is it just more about letting go?
Well, I think that it's a role that you grow into, and that, you know, as they are growing up, you are growing and evolving and, you know, hopefully, touch wood, becoming a better parent. And, you know, nothing can prepare you for it. And, you know, in terms of actually going into dad mode, it's something that I've found that I've had to adopt or take that role on more in the teenage years.
Right.
Than when they're younger, it's, you know, that's the teenage years can be a huge challenge. And that's, they're a lot of fun. It's like, what happened to my sweet, gorgeous little kid? He's turned into this.
Well, they have to rebel, right? Because they have to find their own identity.
Yeah, they do. They have to find their own voice and their own, you know, identity. And that's just a natural part of it, is that they, you know, break away and then, you know, touch wood, they come back.
Yeah, but you also have to be comfortable with letting them make mistakes, because you don't want, I would imagine you don't want them to ever get hurt. You don't want them to ever have to suffer in any way. But you also know, like, you have to let them fall down in their own way, because that's how they learn, I guess. But
most definitely, that's how we learn, you know, in general. It's how we learn, is by making mistakes. Now, if you're smart, you can learn from other people's mistakes. that's what smart people do.
That would be far too easy.
If the existential advice comes from a parent, kid's not going to listen to it. So.
No, of course. And it is sort of this cruel trick of nature of the universe, where it's like, when you're a teenager and then your parents are like, hey, you know, you should really think about this or do this or don't do that. You're like, shut up, you don't know shit. And then you get older and you're like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, okay, I totally. And then you're in a situation where some kid's acting weird and you're like, hey, you shouldn't. They're going, fuck you, man. You're going, okay.
Yeah.
I guess learn it on your own, you know? What is next for you for the next several months? Are you just going to, do you get to sit at home, or are you going to try to go anywhere? What are you going to do?
Well, for the next few months, I plan to do a lot of fishing.
Nice.
I plan to do a lot of R&R, because come January, I'm going to be going to Toronto for maybe 4 months, maybe longer, and it's going to be the middle of winter. So anything, you know, I'm very, very physically active. I love the outdoors. So I'm going to do everything that I can in the springtime of New Zealand to get out and about. And then come January, I know that it's game on, and also be preparing for that as well. You know, go back into training, and, you know, you always want to enter into a production, you know, 100% fit and healthy. And so there's a certain, you know, a run up that you need, a build up to, you know, what is an endurance race. It's a marathon, shooting anything, and particularly shooting a series over, you know, 5 or 6 months. So yeah, those are my plans. I mean, I could go off and do something else, but there's a couple of concerns for me. Obviously, the COVID of it all. I've been offered a bunch of stuff, and I'm just like not really interested in leaving New Zealand at the moment.
I don't blame you.
You know, but so I think that's all I'm going to do.
Let me ask you a weird question, because we're the same age, and when I look at you and I look at, you know, I see myself and I go, I think we're pretty youthful. But then on our parents' generation, when you saw people in your 40s, they looked like they were 70 when we were younger.
Yeah.
Do we look that way to the young? Are our brains programmed to not see that yet? Or are we, in fact, because we take more, I feel like our generation started to take more interest in health, and there was a little more innovation and that sort. So we exercise and we, you know, am I crazy?
Yeah, no, we're old as fuck. We just, you know, we're completely oblivious to the fact.
Okay, that's okay.
In our minds, we're still 24, but, you know, really, that ship has sailed. But you know what? I'm really enjoying getting older, and you know, the older I get, the more I appreciate, you know, even just the simplest things in life, I have a real sort of gratitude for everything that you are oblivious to and take for granted when you're younger. It's a strange time to be living in. I find it these days, there is nothing predictable about the time we're living in. You know,
right.
There's nothing
right.
that just go back 10 years and there seems to be, you know, kind of this malaise that we were all in, and, you know, and now it's like every day there's just something else that, you know, happens, whether it's politically or whatnot, or with this pandemic, and it's just like, these are gnarly times, you know. there's no two ways about it. Just gnarly times.
They are definitely gnarly times, but it's also like thinking about the idea that, you know, like you said, well, I'm going to shrink my world, and I'm just going to focus on each day. I'm going to go fishing. I'm going to try to get as much. And I think that's a solid plan, because I think in the previous times, and I mean that like 6 months ago, I feel like the fallback was like, oh, I feel uncomfortable. I better get busier. I better work more. I better distract myself more. And now I feel like it's more about, wait, I need to kind of focus on appreciate what's in front of me right now. What do I have today that I can appreciate rather than running out? Because we can't really run around and chase that happiness and distract ourselves.
I just thought, for me, just even, you know, to take this on a way serious level, it's like there's an inherent health risk in, for me, obviously, in leaving New Zealand and then going to Toronto to shoot, you know, and going anywhere and being potentially exposed to this disease for which there is no cure. So I just want to make damn sure that I live each day to its fullest right now and enjoy my family and my friends and get myself as healthy and strong and fit as I possibly can for what's coming down the pike. And I see no need to, you know, to go and try and, you know, chase the dollar right now, you know, or, you know, sort of, or jettison that really valuable time that I have with my family, you know, because I know that it's not going to be possible for me to get back to New Zealand. Once I go to Toronto to start shooting season 3 of The Boys, I'm there for however long I'm there because, you know, I can't come back in the middle of the season like I did the previous 2 seasons because I have to do a quarantine for 2 weeks on either side. So it's the landscape's different.
Yeah. And I mean, what is it? It's like 13 hours, it's about 12 or 13 hours to New Zealand from the West Coast to Toronto. Right, okay.
Add another 5 onto that.
Yeah, is that a direct flight from New Zealand to Toronto, or are you stopping over in Los Angeles along the way?
No, I think I'm going to avoid America.
I might fly
into Vancouver and then Vancouver. I don't know. I don't know why. I just
You know what?
Yeah, life's too short. You know. I don't know. Let's see what happens come November.
You can fly through Vancouver. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, no, I could definitely skip the states.
And listen, if you want, you could. I'll tell you what. You could fly into LA, and you could just drive to Toronto. You know, you could really just get a sense. That was such an earnest. I think I might avoid America right now. Yeah. I don't know.
Is it go-to destination right now? Listen, don't get offended, all you Americans. I love America, I really do, but y'all got some fucking shit going on there right now. And
hey, America, I love you, but I'm just gonna skirt through Vancouver's on this one. I'm just gonna go right around. I remember the first time I met you, and you were so nice because. Listen, I had been a longtime fan of your work, and we were on a flight together, and I think I tweeted, I think Carl Urban's sitting behind me, and not 2 minutes after I tweeted that, you lean forward and go, hey, how's it going? And I'm like, holy shit, and it was just, it was really nice, you know, I had never met you, I didn't know what to expect, and you were really warm, and I think you even came to a comedy show that I was doing, which was incredibly nice of you.
That's right. I remember that. It was fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Those were the old times. I think about those days and I go, oh my God, you know, my heart starts to palpitate being on a plane, doing a show, being around people. Oh my God. What a weird time that was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a funny old thing, isn't it? The fact that I was, to happen to be on social media or obviously when you were, it's a bit scary.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was, you know, like it was a nice time. I do think, and kind of spinning it back to New Zealand, that sort of communal thing, I think is what, you know, New Zealand is such it feels like an intimate community of people. I know there's obviously a lot of people there, but it does feel very communal. And maybe because it's very communal, maybe there is that thing where y'all feel more accountable to each other. Because, you know, it's not hundreds of millions of people. You all kind of see each other and you rely on each other. And maybe that has something to do with why, with the attitudes that you have about your work and the sort of the outlook that you have on life. Maybe it's, you know, if you are dicks, your entire country, your community's like, you're being a dick. You know what I mean? Maybe that's part of it too, the communal aspect.
This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Yeah, I guess, you know, what's been really interesting through this pandemic was, you know, New Zealand really came together as a team of 5 million to defeat this thing, to do our best to, you know, everybody doing what they individually needed to do in order to keep not only themselves, but, you know, everybody safe. As I feel as I look at what's going on in America, it's more of a case of, oh, don't you tell me what to do. Well, I don't want to wear a mask. If I'm, you know.
Let me speak to the manager. No, there's no manager.
Yeah. No.
Put a mask on.
You know, and that is obviously, you know, I'm, you know, looking at it, and obviously you've got 50 states and, you know, probably 50 different ways of dealing with this virus and response, and you know, and that's where there is an advantage of being comparatively speaking small nation, is that you know, we can pull together pretty well and get the job done.
Yeah. I really, 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 really can't tell you how excited I am for season two without giving anything away. And that's one of the reasons why it's been difficult to sort of talk about The Boys on the podcast, because it's just one of those shows where you don't want anything spoiled. Like, every moment of that show is so precious, because you think you know where something's going, and then there's a moment where you're like, Jesus Christ, you know?
Right.
So without giving too much away, what can you say about season two in broad terms, kind of building off season one?
Well, you happen to be in luck, Chris, because I'm very good at speaking in generic broad terms when it comes to promoting a television show, let me tell you.
Yes.
Well, you know, for me, I mean, this season two really picks up where season one ended. And, you know, the boys are on the run. They're wanted felons. Billy Butcher is missing in action somewhere. And, you know, obviously the revelation that, you know, Becca Butcher is alive is a huge game changer for Butcher. And, you know, really the entire season two for him is all about reuniting with his wife. And season two really is a love story for Butcher. And I won't get too much more specific than that. And, you know, Kripke, I guess his sort of, you know, thematically, his idea for season two was to rip away something from each and every character that was most valuable to them. So for Huey, it's Starlight. For Butcher, it's his wife, Becca. For Homelander, it's kind of his status and standing as the leader of the Seven and his popularity and all the things like that that are important to him. You know, for Starlight, it's her belief in her faith, her religion. You know, all of that is thrown into question, and these characters are all challenged in a way that, you know, forces them to step outside their comfort zone. And the interesting thing is to see how they then deal with it or fail to deal with it. And, you know, Eric Kripke was sort of pulled us all together at the beginning of the season and said, listen, you know, we think it would be a mistake just to try and go bigger for season two. So what we're actually going to do is just dive deeper and really get into the minutiae of these characters and how they, you know, they operate. And you know, and I think he completely achieved that. But he also, at the same time, totally went bigger. you know, it's like season two is like season one. It's just been nuked. It's on steroids. It's you know, the set pieces are bigger, the action's bigger. You know, because you have this inherent familiarity with the characters, it's just a much more sort of rich and rewarding experience. And you know, I'm super excited for people to see it. It's just it packs a lot of punch.
Yeah, I mean, and I have so much faith in the group and in Kripke also, for because The Boys season one is one of those shows where you're like, how the fuck are they going to top this? And I really, because a lot of show there are shows that can out of the gate just blow it out of the water, and then it can be very difficult to follow up. It's like, how do you follow? But the sense that I'm getting is that y'all were able to actually pull that off.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's we sort of, you know, I think it's always a mistake to go out there and to try and best what you've done. You have to kind of refocus and literally start from scratch and just be in the moment and just try and deliver the best that you can. You have to set yourself new goals. And that was certainly the case for me this season. There were elements about last season that I felt, you know, I could have worked harder on, and I worked harder on those this season. This season actually left me so drained. This was probably one of the most challenging pieces of work that I've ever done. And I think when you get to the end of episode 8, you'll go, oh, I get what he's talking about now.
Okay.
It took a while for me to shake it off. And I'm not usually like that. Once I leave set, I can pretty much leave the work behind, but not this time. This time it lingered for a good month or so. So, you know, the show really kind of forced me to tap into, you know, a certain mode that is not a comfortable place to be, and it's a lot of, without giving too much away, is a lot of good stuff to look forward to.
Is The Boys, I can't remember, does The Boys release all at once or does it release weekly?
No, we're going to do it different this season. Season two is going to release on September the 4th. We're releasing the first three episodes and then we're going weekly after that.
Okay.
So the remaining five will drop. And that's good. I mean, as much as I love binge watching a show, I also love that anticipation, that excitement that you get for, you know, that next week for the next episode to come out. Yeah. And then also having the ability to really kind of digest and think about what you've seen. So, yeah.
I agree. For the fan experience, I know it's great to be able to just wolf everything down in one sitting, but then it all just kind of lives in your short-term experience, your short-term memory experience. And you often don't think about it too much again afterwards. The Boys was an exception. We watch it all at once and we, you know, weeks afterwards, like, oh my God, I can't believe that one fucking thing that they, you know, there are just these moments they're just moments that stick with you. And, but the experience of week to week, it allows you to have conversations with people. It allows it to breathe. Like, I feel like it really allows the show to have a life. And also I love the idea of knowing that, you know, like every time at that time, every week at that time, that thing is there for you and you get to watch it and you get to share it with someone or talk about it with your friends. I mean, I think we're losing that a lot because we expect to see everything whenever we want, however we want it, as much as we want. And I love that it's being parsed out in that way.
Yeah, I do too, because it's all too easy and we all do it. When you binge something, you just devour it. And sometimes it's very easy to miss some of the subtle layering and flavors that are in there. And, you know, and certainly, you know, going week by week is going to, I think, allow for that to sort of, you know, to sort of percolate a little bit more. It's just great now that we're at that point where, you know, we're handing this project over to the fans and to the audience. You know, it's been sitting with us for the last year and it's an exciting place to be. And I just can't wait for it to get out there and, you know, and just to sort of, you know, get sort of some sense from everybody as to, you know, as to how they feel about it.
And then, Is there anything else that you're signed on to at the moment that you, in theory, would shoot after The Boys is done? Or are you not looking that far ahead yet?
No, not looking that far ahead. As I said, I'm just at the moment just primarily focused on season three of The Boys. I'm also actually currently working on a couple of other animated projects.
Cool.
One I'm shooting for Netflix, and the other one is a small part in a in this really fun animated TV show. Can't talk too much about either of those, but that actually has been, you know, so much fun to, you know, explore that aspect of it. Again linking back to, you know, doing things that multifaceted. I really enjoy having that opportunity to work on characterization, but yet, you know, in this COVID world, just doing it in a sound booth for, you know, 4 hours at a pop. It's been a lot of fun.
That's great. Can I ask you a weird Star Trek question?
Sure.
That to me was such a fun thing to do, but as an actor it felt like a tremendous amount of pressure, because in a way, yes, you are playing a character, but you're also sort of like playing DeForest Kelly playing a character at the same time. Like, what is in your head when you're approaching that kind of a role? It's not the same as something that's biographical, but it is, but in a weird way it is, because you're coming off of something that did exist. And so Do you wrestle with that? Did you struggle with that, or was it just sort of like, oh, this is just like a fun theatrical exercise?
Yeah, I'd be lying if I was to say that there wasn't some degree of anxiety, particularly around the shooting of the first movie. It's not like, you know, I had some specific element of my character, like, you know Zach did obviously a phenomenal job of playing Spock, and you know, and you know, having that a particular makeup look, you know, certainly adds to the acceptance of that character. But we were certainly never given a mandate to try and imitate what had come before. You know, it was completely up to us to make these characters our own and to take the ball and run with it. But, you know, for me, as a sort of a long-term appreciation of Star Trek, you know, I used to watch it, as a kid with my dad. I just felt that I would feel somewhat gypped if I went into that movie theater and was to see a character that wasn't recognizably Bones. So for me, the challenge was to really identify certain aspects of, the late great DeForest Kelly's performance, and a kind of sort of cherry pick, whether it be a certain mannerism or a feel, a vibe, and kind of imbue that into a younger version of the character. And you know, I certainly didn't want to get into the imitation game, but at the same time, it had to be recognizably Bones, and that was the challenge. And yeah, it was freaky at times. I think probably one of the most special memories I have out of that whole time was we were actually the cast was at a William Shatner charity event, and we were walking into it, and somebody tapped me on the shoulder, and it was Susan Nimoy, Leonard Nimoy's gorgeous wife, and she said, "Hey, Carl, walk with us." And so I joined them, and she said, "Look, I just want you to know, you know, when Leonard watched the movie last night, when you came on screen, he wept." Oh. And at first I was sort of panicked. I thought, oh shit, well, I must have really screwed that up. That was but she went on to explain, and she said what I'd done was reminded her so much of her friend, of his friend, DeForest Kelly, who had, you know, passed away a few years before. And to me, that was just like the coolest thing, I think, that sort of ever really happened to me around Star Trek, was just that sort of, you know, getting to, you know, to meet and work with Leonard Nimoy, and yeah, it was pretty special.
That's incredible. I mean, you know, your careers can be long. You can win awards. You can do all sorts of things. But those are the moments of your career that I think there just is no substitution for something like that. I mean, that is such a special nugget of a thing that you get to have for the rest of your life. That must have just sort of felt like, okay, I think I did something good. I think I'm on to something special here.
Yeah, it was something that was very special to me. But it's interesting because when I personally look at my role in those Star Trek movies, I see the character. I just think the character is quite different than what DeForest Kelly had done. But somehow, I think in the sort of halcyon haze of fandom that it's kind of morphed into, oh, it's exactly the same, but it's actually not.
I don't think it's exactly the same at all. I think it's exactly what you said. I think it's you had your version of him, but there were nods, and the nods sort of rooted it back to the thing without being like, I am just a robot imitating this other person, which would have probably come off more cartoonish. So I think I completely agree with you. I don't think you did exactly what he did. I think you did your thing, but there was this sort of like, if you knew the old show very well, there were nods of like, aha, you know, which felt very much like a conversation with the audience of like, hey, we love this character. We love this show. We're all in this together. And I thought that made it really beautiful and special.
There was certainly some moments there where we were on set and I'd be working with Zach Quinto and he's in, you know, full Spock mode. And I come to a line like, are you out of your Vulcan mind? And, you know, to have to just, it's so surreal to be delivering that line and being on the bridge of the Enterprise, having watched it when I was a kid I think I remember actually messing up a couple of times because I'm like, this is,
this is too weird.
Just so nuts. The cool thing about, working on that obviously was collaborating with JJ, and you could go to him and just say, hey, listen, I have an idea for this scene. And he would hear you out and he goes, okay, try it out. And it was a really, open collaborative experience. And, I'm going to feel quite blessed in that regard to, when you work with a caliber of collaborator of his level, it only enhances what you do and the results.
Well, I as many people as I've gotten to talk to on the podcast and listen to and learn from, the one thing that I really feel like I understand is that, like long-term success, long-term, it's not an accident. I mean, I think what I infer is that you're great to work with because you attract these great directors, these great projects time and time again. And anyone can get a break once or twice maybe, but it's so consistent with your work. I think that's one of the inspiring things, in addition to your performances to take away from. It's like, oh, Carl must be a great guy to work with because the evidence is that all of these great people wouldn't waste their time with someone who sucked to work with. And I think that's a really valuable lesson for any performer, for anyone, when they're sort of looking at like the length of a career. And like you said, hey, I've worked on some great stuff and I've worked on some other stuff too. But it does seem to be about just being in the present and having fun and kind of making it the best experience you can each time. Is that, am I, would you agree with that?
Yeah, for me, I'm drawn to working with the best collaborator that I can, I didn't plan this. There are certain things like Star Trek that I actually targeted and went after because I wanted to be a part of it. And I was excited by those projects. And historically, people at various times in my life have said, oh my God, wow, you're so lucky. And I'm like, I kind of believe like, you make your own luck. And it's like, yeah, it's funny. Yeah, lucky I am lucky. But I've also found that the harder I work, the luckier I seem to get.
Right. Right.
And I just, that's, you know, I wanted to sort of be easily identifiable to prospective directors as someone who is an asset and someone who is of value to a production, and not just on set, but, you know, in terms of, you know, holistically, someone who can contribute on a multitude of levels. And, you know, and also I love learning, and I just find that, you know, if you just want to aim to work with the best that you can, and in that way that you're actually going to find that you grow as a result.
Well, I've always found you to be just nice as fuck, Carl Urban, just such a nice guy. You've always been so nice to me. The bunch of times that we've gotten to hang out, and as we're kind of wrapping this up, you know, because like you said, there's a bit of chaos going on in the world. What makes you joyful? What kind of keeps you grounded? You know, like, what is it that you kind of look for and focus on in times of chaos?
Well, for me, it's pretty simple. It's just focus on what is in my circle of concern, and that is an influence, and that's my friends, and that's my family. Spending time with my boys, with my parents, and the people I love, and you know, it's just about sharing quality time and being in the moment, and not, you know, all too often in life we even when we're with someone, we can be easily distracted by the outside, by, you know, there's a phone call, a text, a social media, something, you know, happening out in the cyber world, and it's all too easy to get distracted and just take for granted about what's right in front of your face. And I think in these times, it's particularly poignant just to be able to reduce it, you know, existentially just down to the simplest thing, and that is just being in the moment with the people you love and not taking it for granted. And to me, that's the most valuable lesson to come out of these times.
Well, I hope I get to see you in person again one of these days, perhaps in a Comic-Con style situation. Or
perhaps you'll come to Canada or New Zealand.
Oh my God, I would love to. I'm not getting, like, New Zealand is at the top of our bucket list. It was the next place we were kind of looking at, you know, like, where could we go for our big vacation in 2020? And New Zealand was on the list. And so, hopefully.
Where could we go and escape if America devolves into civil chaos and unrest? It would have been New Zealand, wouldn't it?
I mean, I do wonder if we're knocking on the door in New Zealand, if they're like, no, we know where you're from. Get the fuck back there. You can't come in here. What are you talking about? Yeah. Get out. But I really hope that New Zealand is someplace that we get to visit. And I will definitely hit you up for just where should we go? What should we do? You know, just any kind of hometown recommendations.
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. Yeah, for sure. Most definitely. If and when you get the opportunity, you just let me know.
Thank you, Carl Urban. I hope you stay safe and healthy, and
thank you.
And hang in there.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies and brands to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity, a how-to guide for navigating life's challenges from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.